This is Dane Shoemaker with Shoemaker Lab. Just came up with that name last night.
Nice work.
Bought the domain. So, you know, Shoemaker Films, we work with clients to do podcasts, social media content, documentary work, branded content. We are starting a series now to get to know local entrepreneurs, creatives, business owners in the greater Philadelphia area. And this is the first time that we're doing this. So I'm here with Mr. Ken Taylor of The Running Place in Newtown Square. So thanks for coming on and sharing your story.
Well, thanks for having me for the first go. How about
yeah,
that?
Absolutely.
Let's see how it goes.
Normally I'm on the other side of the camera, so we'll see how this goes. But
perfect.
I'm feeling good today. So
learn by doing.
Yeah. Cool. So I really want to hear about your story, how you've come to be running this place, the Running Place in Newtown Square. I want to hear a little bit about your story. You know, I know you taught at Girard College for a little bit. You're from Alabama. So I think, you know, a couple times that we've talked and you're on a director of the Newtown Square Business Association. So that's how we know each other.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. So why don't you just kind of, you know, give a little bit of background on yourself and then we'll kind of dive into things. So yeah.
This is editable, right?
Oh yeah. 100%.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I was born in Brewton, Alabama. I think the population at the time, 1973, was about 400 people, middle of nowhere. Okay. But I'm literally probably a mutt. You know, my family's from South Carolina. My mother ended up, you know, having me down south, and then they ended up moving back north. And then so my family's all from the south originally. I'm the first person in my family kind of raised in the north. Okay. And then at 17, 18, I went back south and didn't come back till I was about 30.
Okay.
I grew up with a lot of the Southern isms and things like that and the mindset of being a little bit slower maybe. But
I can hear a little bit twang, but I don't get the slowness from you. Yeah.
I guess always moving around, that helps too. But yeah. I was a kid that played baseball growing up. I love the sport of baseball. And my dad was my coach. And we moved, and then I had a coach that when we were drafted, kids were drafted with baseball, and I was drafted, and the coach used inappropriate language, so I wasn't allowed to play for that coach, okay. And they wouldn't let me go to another team because of the draft. So my buddy, Brian Perrone, told me, why don't you come play track? You don't play track, you run. But I didn't know what it was.
Right.
So it was CYO. So I was a CYO kid in around fifth grade.
Okay.
And I started running track in fifth grade. And
that's Catholic Youth.
Catholic Youth Organization. Okay. I was a St. John the Beloved. You know, put one foot in front of the other. And if you practice, you'll do well. And from CYO through high school, I finished high school in Delaware. I did go to school in Pennsylvania for a little bit in Kennett High School. But I didn't run there. It was just middle of my freshman year. And then I moved back south. A lot of moving in my life. So,
yeah.
But then, you know, I ran track in Delaware and, I did really well. I got a scholarship to university. I won a couple state titles. I'm a mile or half miler back in the day, went off to college, got injured, which is pretty much par for my course for the rest of my life. Mm. And then came back home, wasn't going to go back to university, and ended up joining in the Marine Corps.
Okay. I didn't know that.
So, that's every time you talk to me, you probably find another layer of that onion.
Yeah.
So I went in the Marine Corps and did really well in boot camp and moved on, spent 3 years pretty much traveling with the U.S. Marine Corps and Africa, the Middle East, so a little bit over all throughout Europe, the Mediterranean, Black Sea, Adriatic, Red Sea, Indian Ocean. And it was a great experience for me. It just really made me appreciate where I came from.
Yeah.
You know, so you always appreciate that. I came back and when I was getting out of the Marine Corps, I applied to a couple of schools. Villanova being a running school because I wanted to get back into running, which is here, but I wasn't living in the area.
Okay.
And UNC and UVA. Both had great history programs, which is kind of where I was going.
Okay.
And I ended up choosing UNC, UNC Chapel Hill. It's, to me, I would move back tomorrow, but my wife's from Delco. So, you know, you don't leave when your wife's from the area.
I'm familiar with that. Yeah.
And, so here I am. I moved up here for, after I went through university at UNC, I was doing a graduate PhD program, I came up here for 1 year while my advisor was on sabbatical. I took a gap year to try and run and give it my last go. Went out to Colorado, trained for the summer, came back really good going into the winter. And then living in the north, I went for a run and came home. And at the end of my run, I slipped on black ice and snapped my ankle in three spots and tibia in half.
Oh, no.
And that was pretty much it for competitive running. You know, yeah, I can run. Right. It's fun. It's, and I still love it. Yeah. But I'll never be like, I would never be fast because I lost flexion in my foot. So, yeah, so it's all good. But it was like, I could keep running and, you know, I was a little frustrated with that, obviously. Yeah. The following year, I stepped in a hole covered with snow and broke my opposite foot.
Oh my gosh.
And then I bought a treadmill. then you don't go outside in the winter here. Yeah. People don't, when I moved up in 2002 into Philadelphia, like people don't realize that we got like 20 some inches of snow a couple of times.
Yeah.
Like we got like, we used to get like a lot of snow.
Yeah. Not and so much anymore.
Not so much anymore, which is good for runners.
I guess so. Yeah.
But then I was came up to Girard College and stayed, and became director of wellness. So I was teaching economics, which is one of my undergrads, and I have a master's in curriculum instruction as well.
Okay.
And then UNC converted the program I was doing into a master's. So I was going through the schooling. I have too many degrees but it's always fun to learn. So I think it's really exciting. So, long story long, I helped a buddy when he was opening up a store up in North Wales, and I really, really loved it because you're helping people in a different way. Sure. And you're teaching, which is something that I've always done. So I'm teaching in a different way. And then my friend Bill Frawley was working with the running place here in Newtown Square and said, hey, we need some help. What about like just helping out on like a couple nights a week and maybe on Saturdays? I'm like, okay. It was close to home and I get to work with a friend and it was really great. And the staff is amazing. I mean, this is before I came on.
And then
Patty and Joan were the godmothers of the running place. They started the store March 17th, 2001. And they, Joan had moved on to Colorado, to be near her, grandchildren and her daughter. And then, Patty wanted to transition out as her son graduated high school and asked me if I wanted to buy the other half of the store. Cause at that time it was Patty and Bill.
Okay.
And then, I said no the first time in 2011, but then we had our daughter and I wasn't home enough to be around, I always want to be, you want to be an active father, an active parent and play an active role in the little one's life. Sure. So, the running place made sense, Patty and I bought Patty out and then Bill and I became the co-owners in 2012. So that was the year that I officially became an owner. I came on helping out in 2008. So I've been here for a pretty long time. I got to work with my best friend, for a lot of years. Then he left me like my work wife, in 2001 and moved out to Bend, Oregon. And he's living in semi-retirement out there. He's hiking all the time, cross country skiing in the winter and paddle boarding in the summer. So he's having a good life. So I've been the sole owner since, January 1st, 2002, 22, yeah. And it's difficult.
Sure.
I know this is a kind of a piece, is it's difficult being a sole owner with so many different wheels turning, ordering and, bringing all those things in and staffing. Everybody after the pandemic was having issues with staffing.
Yeah,
In general, I think small businesses, it's difficult to find staff and retain staff for small businesses.
Yeah.
But I think we've kind of walked through a bunch of things to this point. Like, does that get you to where we are today?
I hear a lot of like running analogies there, walking through things, running through things. Yeah. You became sole owner in 2022. What was that like? I mean, did you have a goal of becoming the owner, or is it kind of, previous owner moved out. It was kind of a reluctant thing.
So when I came on as the owner with Bill in 2012, I knew that he wanted to go out west.
Yeah.
So we had that conversation early on. So I knew he and I were going to work together for years. And then when he was going to want to transition out, then I would buy him out when he left.
Right.
And that way we kept the same family feel of the store. And And so we knew that was going to go on. We didn't know when. I think the pandemic might have sped that up a little. Might have sped that up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because we both were a little bit fried after, you know, 2021 year was probably maybe more difficult than 2020 for us. Because in 2021, the inventory issues with all companies were kind of crazy.
Right.
Trying to figure out if we could find a shoe in this size and you can't. And then you're trying to, you know, pivot and trying to, you know, help the customer get the best fit.
Right.
And it was really hard because inventories with all brands were logistically a nightmare. So it was pretty crazy times. And I think Bill did a lot of the shoe purchasing, ordering on that point. And I did all the ordering of everything else. So I think he was fried a little bit more than I was
in
that sense. And then and things got back a little bit better in 2022 when he transitioned out, and things are a little bit better now than they were.
Yeah.
There's still hiccups now more than we used to have, but I think it's just the life of the business right now. That's just kind of how it is. Right?
Yep. Do you have specific brands that you carry here?
We're actually probably funny for the customers. We handpick everything. Nobody tells us what to carry. We choose what we're going to carry based off of lab research, content of looking at past shoes, reading reviews, putting the shoe on my foot, and going through it. Bill and I used to go back and forth with one another trying to handpick the things that we're going to carry. Our entry-level shoe isn't an entry-level shoe. Our entry-level shoe is going to give you 2.5 times your body weight and shock absorption up to a 310-pound person for 500 walking miles, 350 running probably, give or take a little bit, and that's the mean. But that's kind of the entry-level for us. We want to make sure that we're dispensing shock so that the person's able to be as active as they want to be, whether they're walking or running.
Yeah.
You know, running shoes are like nomenclature, like Kleenex the tissue.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of like a running shoe is something that offsets shock, and that's why it's called that. So functionally, if you're moving forward or standing on concrete, working at Home Depot, or you're a nurse doing 12-hour shifts, we got you covered.
Cool.
But back to the brands, we're 23 years in this weekend, and we've never carried Nike in 23 years. We carried Adidas. We had a Nike contract, just never brought them in. They have some good shoes. Nike has some phenomenal racing shoes, and they have some great shoes that are in line with what we carry, but they're as good, not better. So, you know, the number one brand in the market for specialty when people are fit for shoes is Brooks.
Okay.
You know, so,
interesting.
And we say that in Brooks does running and walking. So you're not going to see them on the basketball courts. You're not going to see them on the football field with cleats or anything like that. But they are running and walking specific. So they kind of gear their stuff that way. And then the other marketing brands that are blowing up, people know, are, you know, Hoka, which has been around for a little bit over 12 years now.
Yeah.
Which is, they've blown up a lot, and the National Podiatry Association of America kind of gave them a couple check marks, like a lot of the other brands have, but they kind of brought them into the fold there. So you'll hear that a lot more from podiatrists when you're out there, just taking some, they're really, really soft. They're like a Cadillac, you know, soft and squishy,
which
some people don't like, you know, that's why there's a shoe for everybody on the wall.
Yeah.
And then the other brands, you know, we carry, you know, we just are bringing in On Cloud is the brand that we're bringing in. So that's a Swiss brand. Everybody knows it because Federer is involved with that brand. And it's, so they're all cloud-based shoes.
Okay.
They have a support shoe and they have a neutral shoe. And our thing with bringing in shoes is they have to functionally work for the customer.
Yeah.
They have to be supportive. They have to have the shock absorption, or we're not going to bring it in.
Yeah.
I'd rather not sell you a shoe than put you in the wrong shoe.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the whole mantra of the shop here.
Yeah, you're really big on, I was like, do you do e-commerce? I mean,
No, that was one of the questions I know that you had asked us about. And it's like, no, the answer is no. And the reason is this, I have friends that sell online. And then the problem is, if I sell you a shoe online, I don't know if it's the right shoe for you unless I fit you and I have you in our system.
Yeah.
We keep a history of every customer and every shoe that they've purchased from us so we can look at that history of the person and what's functionally worked for them and what changes over time. Because every shoe changes annually or biannually as far as some functional fit.
Yeah.
So if I just sold a shoe, it's a sale.
Right.
But you know, we're about the community. So we want to make sure that we're helping people to be able to move forward in the best possible way. And the only way of doing that is making sure it's the right fit.
Yeah.
So selling it online, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Everybody tells me I need to sell online. And we're not archaic. Well, kind of, we are archaic.
Well, I think it's different. I mean, it, you know, if it, you know, you can go on Amazon, you can go on, you know, whatever, foot retailer online.
Yeah, you know, you go online and you're getting the shoe for the same price.
Yeah.
But you're getting it fit properly here.
So yeah, I think that's a big differentiator. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a rare thing, especially this time, you know, in 2024. Yeah. People kind of want that, you know, hands-on, you know, customized approach to getting fitted for the right shoe. And the shoes are a big thing too. You're walking on it all day long. If it doesn't fit right, you're going to have back problems and, you know, feet, you know, feet are going to hurt. Like,
you know, that's like 100%.
Yeah.
Shoes are an orthotic. They're correctively, they set up your kinetic chain, your ankles, knees, your hips, your lower back. We have a local podiatrist that is like, it's either a copay or a good pair of shoes. Yeah. so that plays well for both of us, I guess.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the shop or the staff, nobody at the staff tries to sell you anything.
Right.
They try to have a conversation and they try and fit you. When you're having that conversation with us, when we do the assessment, the fitting, they're figuring out what you're trying to do, what you want to do, and if we can help get you there in a better way. We don't want to put an insert into every shoe because some shoes have inserts. And now we have great inserts if you need them.
Yeah.
But it's about making sure that the person comes through here and gets the best possible fit. And when they go out the door, they're able to do whatever they want to do more healthfully. And then they know we're not there just for the sale. You know, so we're, you know, again, we're hitting our 20, going into our 24th year. We've hit, you know, 23 years on the 17th of March, St. Patrick's Day. We should do something big, something, you know, but the big thing is that, you know, at the end of the day, if we treat people the way we want to be treated, you know, the golden rule, you know, I think we'll be here for another 23 years. So,
Sure. Yeah. I don't know when this episode is going to air necessarily, but I know, you're going to be celebrating 23 years in business, March 17th. That is a week away, basically a couple days. Yeah, a couple days away.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, this weekend, actually,
right? Yeah. Sunday. We're just, 4 days, 3 days.
Yeah. So,
I forget what today is,
You know, what do you have planned for that? I know.
Yeah, so it's actually really cool. We have Hoka, the brand, is coming in with our Hoka rep, and we're doing a prediction run. And a prediction run or walk. And the great thing about that, running and walking, it's all inclusive. You can go out there and do it by yourself.
Yeah.
But the prediction piece, I think, is really cool because it doesn't go to the fastest runner.
Yeah.
So I think it's really neat. Like, well, you know, we might have a speed walker or a walker that is more accurate for how long it takes for them to walk 3.1 miles. So they'll come in, they'll sign in, they'll say how long it's going to take them to walk or run 3.1 miles. We'll set it down on the sheet and then we'll head off and go. And when they come back through the door, they'll call out their number. We'll write their time down and then we'll see who's the most accurate through the mix. And they're going to win a free pair of Hoka, which is great. Hoka's going to have a bunch of raffles to go. We actually had a beer made for giving away to the first 35 people to make a purchase.
Really?
We have a buddy of ours that is, he's won, well, two buddies, in a Vic and Paul, and they've won multiple beer competitions. They won the number one beer at the Richmond Beer Festival.
Okay.
And so they have these great recipes, and they've done it once before for us when we came across the street and did our grand reopening of the new shop in 2014. But this is going to be a Citra IPA that it's going to be just a gift with purchase for over 21 years of age.
Right.
And, but it's just a giveaway. It's something neat that we can do through the mix, and then we'll have some other raffle giveaways. I am kind of a beer snob, so that kind of plays into it for things.
I thought you might be.
So one of the raffle prizes is going to be like a 4-pack of Heady Topper. Cool. If people know it, it's a beer out of Vermont, out of Stowe, Vermont, which is pretty hard to get your hands on. And then we're going to have shoes, outfits, and, you know, different. Every hour we're going to pull a raffle. We're lucky to have a great PT in the area, Accelerate with Brian Jocelyn's company, and he's going to have Andrew Tavarian on site doing free PT sessions on Saturday. People just have to email or call in. They can slide themselves into the mix. So that's kind of cool that we do that piece there. Like it's community, right? You bring the PT in and they can actually help people that are starting to get those little bit of hiccups going into training for Broad Street that we have coming up.
Right, right.
So we try and do some of those sessions a few times a year, which again is free, always free. We don't charge for anything like that because I think it's just you're in the community, you should serve the community. So that's ways of us to be able to go out there and do some more positive things.
Yeah, that's great. I wouldn't say that I'm a beer snob, but I'm definitely a fan of the microbrews. Are they a local brewer or
they're home brewers.
They're home brewers. Okay.
And that they're home brewers and they're in a local brew club and then they have their competitions throughout the year and then they travel throughout the East Coast for competitions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've they have medals and it's pretty cool. I would love for them to open a place.
Yeah.
And it's a conversation. But it's like when you have another full-time job, how do you, create all the other stuff?
I feel like Newtown Square needs a brewery, like a brew pub, right on St. Albans Circle or something like that, right?
That would be great, wouldn't it? It'd be really close to here. We could do group runs to it.
I'm down. I'll pick up running then. Yeah. cool. Okay. So, I know we kind of bounced around a little bit, kind of going back to the Marine Corps, I think it's interesting. like anything that you picked up from that, what was that experience like?
It was a great experience for me because it showed me the world.
Yeah.
It showed me.
I have a lot of respect for our service members
I was really lucky, and I do think this everywhere has problems.
Yeah.
But we're so blessed to be where we are, no matter what type of person, where we're from, what nationality. We have more opportunities here than we have in most places.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. And we can always try and help others and lift others up. But seeing outside the U.S. and back in the U.S., it definitely made me appreciate where I came from.
Yeah.
From a country out in the country, and then coming up and living in the city in Fairmount, and working with some of the most amazing people in the world at Girard College. I mean, that piece pulls into like the Marine Corps, me seeing the world and coming to Girard, which was an amazing, amazing piece. People don't understand who Girard.
Girard College because the story is really pretty cool.
Stephen Girard was probably the richest man in the United States when he passed away in the middle 1800s. During the yellow fever epidemic, he was like wiping people's brow and helped reduce the mortality rate during the yellow fever epidemic by pulling people out of the city so they got fresh air.
And this is what was his late 1800s?
1839, okay. when he passed, 1848, Girard opened.
Oh, okay.
And it's crazy, the story is he left a $2 million endowment when he passed. And the person that built Founders Hall at Girard College literally bought the Capitol building in D.C., the same architect. Which is pretty cool.
Well, they look, kind of similar.
With that, the Roman columns. But he left the school.
I think the Harrisburg State Capitol, isn't it the same?
I think it's the same thing, framework on that. And then the Milton Hershey School is based off Girard College.
Okay.
Even the Ellis School for Girls, which is just out here in Newtown Square, or used to be out here in Newtown Square, where Ellis Preserve is. The Ellis School for Girls was actually formulated from some conversations with Girard College from back in the day.
Okay.
As far as the structure and because that was a long, and as far as they progressed for a girls' school similar to that. Because Girard was originally for white orphan seafaring males.
Okay.
It was illegal at the time to educate minorities or women. So it was great. Like Cecil B. Moore and Martin Luther King marched on Girard College in the early 60s, and the Hicks brothers were the first minorities to go through the school.
Yeah.
And then ladies decided they wanted to march in the 80s, and the school opened to females in the middle 80s. I think it was 85. And now it's probably more than 60% female. But the great thing was, as it turned over time, it's for single parents below the poverty line. So it gives these kids that test in academically this great opportunity to go out and do good, and go on to university. I think when I left Girard College in 2012, 98% of the students went off to university.
Okay.
And that's probably one of the highest percentages of any school in the area. which was really, really, that was a positive piece to it, you know? Yeah. And it was kids getting an opportunity where they might not have gotten it otherwise, or it helped give them a leg up. And it was weird for kids living in the city, because it was a boarding school.
Yeah,
they used to board all the time, but when I came on, they had moved because things changed and things cost more.
Yeah,
you know? So they got to the point where they were boarding from Sunday night until Friday afternoon. So their academic week was there on campus from grade 1 through grade 12, which is...
And then they'd go home on the weekends.
And then they'd go home on the weekends. And there was a huge New York contingent, and there would be buses that would drive the kids, you know, back up to New York and then pick them up on Sunday and bring them back. It was a pretty interesting piece, you know.
What time frame was that when you were working there?
I moved up in 2002, and I left in 2012.
Okay.
So that dynamic with that shift, I moved through there. So, you know, you had the recession, you know, 2007, 2008, going through that mix there. Yeah. And the endowment was one of the top 20 endowments in the country, people don't realize.
Yeah.
Like Stephen Girard paid off the War of 1812 debt, paid off the Pennsylvania state debt. He started the Second National Bank of the United States. He was a farmer. Which is really amazing that we have this guy. And
I feel like he's not like one of those well-known, like the Rockefellers and all that stuff. He's not like,
but because he didn't have children, you know, to grow with his funds and do good with that, you know. So he just had this one established, you know, this one established program for him. And then there's Girard Estate in the city, and so that runs Girard College.
Okay.
There's Girardville in the mountains. That was a coal mine town.
Really?
And then he has a farm. I mean, it's just an interesting piece of what it was. And Girard is involved in real estate in Philadelphia as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he pretty much owned Market Street back in the day, which is pretty absurd.
Wow.
He had so many buildings. He still owns like a couple, like one or two blocks down there.
Okay.
Right off of Market.
Their estate owns it, or whatever.
Yeah, the estate building's in there, but they rent the space around, but they own the property lines. Wow. Yeah.
Girard Point Bridge, right?
And exactly.
Down the shore.
Yep. But it's a pretty neat story.
Yeah.
And I think that just gave me an appreciation and love of Philadelphia. I mean, the students were amazing. Philadelphia was amazing. I would get up at 4:30 in the morning and leave campus and run down to Kelly Drive and go for runs on Kelly Drive. And you couldn't, I mean, you're in the city and then you're literally in the park within 5 minutes.
Right.
Now, Philadelphia has the largest park system of any city in the world.
Right.
Which, I mean, you don't even, I'm like, and I didn't know that moving up here. So
that was
pretty amazing.
I think Fairmont Park's like the largest urban park in the city in the country.
Yep.
Maybe, yeah.
It
maybe
is. More. Completely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the Girard College gave me the opportunity to teach and work with youth, you know. So it's the only thing I'll say about owning the store is that I do miss working with students, so every day here, all the staff, we teach in different ways. Half the staff are teachers in one way or another. We have an OT on staff.
Okay.
But teachers are great because they're always learning. They know they need to always learn to keep up with things.
Right.
So that benefits all the customers and, you know, the community when they come into the shop. So I think that's, you know, comes full circle from me teaching the early years at Durham Tech Community College, Cape Fear Community College, and then moving up here and then being at Girard College and then just teaching in this facet now,
which I love.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So you taught economics at Girard?
I taught economics. Yeah. And so we talk about hats.
You know,
I taught economics. The head of school, there was a new head of school that came on and went through like, you know, all the resumes and everything. And I also had a minor in sport administration.
Okay.
And, which was really cool at UNC.
Yeah.
You know, you got to play on the Dean Dome floor to learn how to play basketball.
Oh, nice.
And coach, which is pretty crazy. Anson Dorrance soccer. And like, it was pretty, pretty cool experience for me, in the 90s. And, so I became the director of wellness, which was, we have nurses on campus. We had a physician that would come in on campus, optician that came on campus for students.
Yeah.
We had counseling services on campus. We had, you know, health, PE, all those programs on campus and staff wellness on campus. So I was kind of put over that hub. I started an urban farm. I wrote a grant in my economics class. The kids did their final final exam was a small business plan. I took the small business plan and wrote a grant. And City Harvest under Pennsylvania Horticultural Society gave us a very, very generous grant. And so we started with some raised beds and just kept growing it. And all the crops would either go into the kitchen to local food cupboards.
Yeah.
Which was a really, that's really so cool. Great program. And I didn't have a green thumb before that.
Yeah.
So I just read a lot. So
you had established small like micro farms around Girard College campus?
We probably had over an acre.
It grew slowly, one continuous acre.
Four by 20-foot beds, raised beds.
Okay.
Is how we initially started it. And then it just kept adding on to a greenhouse and kept adding on to the mix.
Wow.
You know, we had propagating our crops. Rosemary chicken was made from this, you know, when they would, you know, do some things in the kitchen, the salad bar.
Yeah.
The salad was from the garden. And a lot of these students that lived in the city where they come from food deserts, which people don't realize.
Right.
And the city, it was crazy because they'd never seen broccoli grow. You know, what is broccoli? What does it look like?
Yeah.
You know, do you see it overcooked? So the great thing was like Stephen Girard did so many things and Girard gave me the opportunity to do so many things. So when I took on the role of director of wellness, I said I had to be able to keep my economics class.
Yeah.
So I got to keep that in the mix. And so the positive was Stephen Girard was a philanthropist. He was a farmer. He was a businessman. And I got the opportunity to teach my economics. I got to work in the farm, which science teachers would come down and they could talk about photosynthesis.
Yeah.
You know, English teachers could come down and write poetry with their kids when there's wildflowers and bees are pollinating and coming across there, you know, butterflies. Yeah. And then if math, you could do just measurements. So there's so many things you could tie into the garden through all sides of academics.
Absolutely.
Which is pretty cool.
There's something therapeutic too about just getting your hands dirty. And
I would go in at five in the morning before anybody was in it, get the rain gardens spraying water on everything. And then I'd probably leave at 7 at night and I never had a bad day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It was fun.
Cool. That sounds great. So I guess, you know, like kind of like some tactical things. I mean, anything that you know, advice that you would have for like things that you've learned from. I mean, I know that the pandemic was very difficult going through that, you know, any other challenges that you've overcome that maybe you pulled some nuggets of wisdom from?
I think the pandemic was, you know, we were closed for 11 and a half weeks. We were required to be closed because we were deemed not a necessity. Even though we had physicians calling us to try and get their patients.
Oh, wow.
So it was tough. We tried to put through, there was a form you could fill out to try and get situated so that you could be deemed essential.
Yeah.
On the medical side, and they didn't deem us essential. So that was a bummer. but we flipped, and Bill and I just, you know, we worked hard. We got a postcard out really, really fast.
Yeah.
You could call into us, and if we had helped you in the past, we would actually could look up your history, see what it was. And if the shoe was the same, we would deliver it and drop it off at your house.
Okay.
Wow. We did some online fittings. We had a Brannick device. We had done some, drop off, talked people on the phone and then gone back and picked up the shoes outside of their houses. So it was just, you know, Bill and I, and the good thing was all of our staff, we paid them to stay home. Because that's what we were doing. And it gave us the opportunity, which we were proactive with, was that when we were able to open up again, all the staff would still be there.
Yeah.
And it was the right thing to do for the staff. If you can, you should.
Yeah.
You know, wow. So it was a great, you know, I think the staff appreciated it. The staff's family. I mean, nobody's the boss here. I mean, actually, you won't see Sharon that much, but she's probably the real boss, the office manager back here. But like everybody helps one another. It's a community. We all turn back and forth and ask people questions as we're going through. So I think the pandemic is be able to pivot fast.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of friends pivoted to online at that time. And we were not comfortable with that because that was just making, you know, we were just not comfortable with that.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, delegating is something that I have problems with. And I probably always will. I think I've come to realize that.
Right,
that's a difficult skill.
That's a hard thing to do.
And I think that's something I've learned, you know, since Bill left.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, Bill was, you know, Bill and I, it was either he or I did something, and now it's me and trying to delegate, which is, no, it's, the staff's great, but it's like, it's always, what, you know, is this getting situated and not knowing sometimes is like, you know, I have an issue delegating.
Right.
You know, I'd rather the staff take care of all the customers. The other thing is just, you know, being true to yourself. I think that played true through the pandemic because we didn't just sell online. We didn't sell online. We kept doing what we did. And when we opened back up, our customers came back in. And so the moral compass is do right by the community and they're going to do right by you. And they're going to keep coming in because they trust you. Like, I think we have equity and trust with the community. And I think that's the big thing that came out of 2020 going forward, being able to flip fast. And then
I think building on that community, I mean, you have a weekly running group that you kind of
people bring people in. Yeah, Monday night group is great.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, it's community coming together. And
yeah.
We never wanted to create a club, like a TRP, the running place club.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want to be like, we didn't want people to feel exclusive. And it's not all running. It's running and walkers come here on Monday nights. We leave at 6:45 sharp.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we always say the shop's for runners and others. So we have walkers going out with us. We have runners going out with us. If you're a first timer, there's always somebody to go out with. But that piece there is it's all community, but they're all different groups.
Yeah.
We have Fast Tracks, which Joan, the original owner, started that track club.
Okay.
A long time ago, and they're more geared over towards Valley Forge area. And then we have Delco Roadrunners. This is Delco, obviously.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of those guys, and this is their Monday night run. So they have mixed groups, and it's really welcoming of everybody coming through the mix. We have Run Strong members from Havertown. We have Drexel Hill Runs. We're really lucky. We have some great groups in the area, and so we just want to be inclusive of everybody. And it's just like it's a quick, simple, easy day. When you have a case of the Mondays, to get out the door and like check that off the list and get your week started in the most positive way.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's cool. What you meet here at.
Meet here on Monday nights at 6:45 sharp. We leave 6:45 sharp. We leave. That's always like on the nose.
Nice.
But so people start showing up around 6:30. The shop says closed, but you'll see people wandering in and out with the door open.
Yeah.
And then sometimes we'll have brands show up and actually do wear tests with their new shoes, which is pretty cool. And it's a chance of you actually putting on, lacing up a pair of shoes, going out and running 3, 4, 5 miles, coming back, giving the shoes back to them and giving them feedback.
Yeah.
And so the next shoe can be better. So it's pretty cool. And you know what? Put 3 miles on their shoes, not yours for the day. So, so it's a positive all the way around.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
So, we'll kind of bring it in here. What's the address of the store? Can people
We are at 3551 Westchester Pike, Newtown Square, Pennsylvania, 19073.
Yeah.
And we've been in this location for 14 years. We've been in this location for 10 years now. We've been here and across the street. We were across the street for 13 plus years.
Okay.
So this is the connection for us.
I didn't realize that.
So we're right here on Westchester Pike in the St. Albans Shopping Center next to Casey's, Fellini's, and Cut Above. You know, nice. Gotta love Cut Above.
Oh, yeah.
And give them a shout out. But, we've been here for 23 years going on, and I easily see us being here for another 23, mm-hmm. maybe a second generation of the Taylors. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks for the opportunity here to chat. Learn a little bit more about Mr. Ken Taylor and the running place. And
I appreciate you having me give this a go and see how this works for you as much as anything
else. I had fun. So
good. It's a positive way. I mean, this is a pretty neat. This is pretty neat. I got to be honest.
Cool.
So this is pretty cool.
I agree.
So thanks for having me in on the first go round.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks again.
Take care.
Cool.